Streaming live on Radio Primavera Sound, we switch to English because we have the pleasure of interviewing Dana Margolin from Porridge Radio, who's about to visit us very soon here in Spain on their final farewell tour.
How are you feeling at the moment? Because, you know, a farewell tour, I can imagine it's probably being...
emotional?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
I feel really, really good. I think the last few months of touring has been really, really special and really fun. We only announced the end of the band before our last US tour, and then we went off and we were in the US for 3 weeks. And it was so beautiful, and I was just full of gratitude and joy and this feeling of like knowing it's the end and that is right. You know, you ever just know something. And we've been playing all these shows and it's been so fun and the shows have been incredible. The audiences have been so incredible. It's been so fun to play these shows. And also it's like, I've known it's the end. And I feel like very at peace, full of potential.
What have people been saying to you? Have there been lots of people being like, please don't end?
Yeah, people are like, why are you doing this? I'm so heartbroken. But I think that it's sweet because people really care, and I'm so grateful that people care, because who knew? But also I think that it's funny to me in a way, because it's like, this is over because it's time for it to be over, and in something ending there's potential for so many other things to happen. And I feel like ending the band has opened up a door in my life in the most beautiful way that I've been trying to find for so long. And then and it turns out that actually the band has run its course, and isn't it incredible that we got to do all these things?
But what is on the other side of that door that has opened for you?
Isn't that the eternal question?
Well, you know, immediately, is it just sort of the free from the pressure of, you know, running a touring band, which is kind of like running a company in a way?
Yeah, big part of it. And I think also it's that I don't know what comes next. And that is amazing, because suddenly there is possibility beyond what I know. And that is really rare, to have a sense of the openness of the whole future. I think it's so easy to get caught up in this kind of whirlpool of like, what am I doing next, how am I doing it? And then to just be like, actually, I have so many ideas and I have so many exciting thoughts about what the future could be, and it's terrifying, but it's also open. And I like that, is that's good. Like, who knows what's on the other side of the door? Right now I just actually am just touring until August, so that is just what first is. I will just tour till August. Hopefully we'll do some farewell shows, we'll see. And then
I mean, maybe you've answered this, but I mean, the obvious question is, like, I guess, why are you splitting up? I mean, is it because the band had run its course, or?
Yeah, I think that's kind of just exactly what what you were saying. And then also, yeah, just it's run its course, and it's time.
Because there's an interesting aspect when we read about the history of Porridge Radio, and it's like, you formed the band to learn to play instruments, to learn to write songs, to perform them, and it was fun, and you became incredibly close friends, and you were living through this incredible journey together. I get the feeling that, because you spoke about a lot of the burnout between your last two albums, no, the pressure of the creativity and the touring. Does success kill the magic?
No, of course not. Success facilitates the magic. With every success we've had, we've been able to go into a studio, go to play shows all over the world. Every bit of success has only pushed us forward and created more exciting things that we could do. But I would say that this band, it developed really organically. I started when I was 19. Didn't play guitar. I was writing loads of songs. I met my bandmates by just coincidence, bumping into them around in places and falling together, not knowing what we were doing, not knowing where it was going. And it was kind of just like, we just got sucked in to this thing that has so much power and movement. And I've been obsessed with it. Like, I have loved being in this band and making all of this work and playing all of these shows. It's been so much fun. But like, I never really knew what was coming next, because I started it not knowing what I was doing. And it's kind of organically spiraled out into this whole universe that we've created, which is such a fun thing to have done, but it also, it means it was always just kind of organically sprawling, like a tendril. I'm imagining like a mushroom spore, you know, like it's just kind of designed itself along the way. And, you know, we got carried along with it and it got carried along with us. And I've given it everything over the last 10 years. Like it really has been so creatively satisfying and it's pushed me in all these directions and it's been, that is so fun. But also I think because of that, when the time comes, you also just know that it's done.
I want to say, as a fan of the band, I certainly think you certainly don't owe us anything, if you know what I mean. I think sometimes fans get a bit like, well, you know, we kind of, but for me, I feel like that's a kind of bad way to look at things. And one of the reasons is because we got the Machine Starts to Sing EP, which is a final record. Now, maybe I'm looking into it too much, but the closing song has the lovely title, I've Got a Feeling, brackets, Stay Lucky. Is that deliberate? You kind of write, this is the closing song because this is like what I want to say? Or was it just, it worked well as the closing song?
I'm trying to remember when we chose the track listing. Track listings are always about flow and about taking you on a journey within a body of work. So like with the album, the track listing took ages to figure out because what we were trying to do was figure out which songs go together best in which order that allows you to go on an emotional journey and that like a journey that can hold you through it. And on a record, the track listing is very different to a set list that you would play live. Often we end up switching things around quite drastically between a record and a live show because it's like when you're listening to something on your own, what you need is to be held through this thing that somebody's made. Especially I think with Porridge Radio, like with our music, it's very intense and it's all about the journey. And I think the EP was equally, I can't remember exactly why we did it, but there was a journey we were taking listeners on with tension and release. And I imagine it was, it's like you want to end on something that feels closing.
I think it definitely does that. And talking about the most recent album, Clouds in the Sky, They Will Always Be There for Me. And in particular, Lavender Raspberries. You said in an interview, and apologies for quoting back to you, it's like a song that I wouldn't write that I wrote. what do you mean by that? I think I kind of get where you're going, but I what do you mean?
That I was possessed and I wrote and it, I didn't know I could write that. I didn't know I could write something on guitar that would sound like that. And I didn't know, I'd written so many of the words in the lead up to writing the song. So all of my notebooks are scrawled like little phrases and bits that would end up becoming that song. But I didn't know. It's like getting on a train. It's like getting on a roller coaster and you're just, and you sit down and then at the end you go, you kind of go, what happened? And I think that's what happened with a lot of songs. It feels like that, where you just sit down and you're on the roller coaster and you're like, well, that's what I'm doing now. And I guess I'm just on this until it's over. And Lavender Raspberries was like that. Some songs aren't, some are more kind of, every song has its own journey, but that one particularly, yeah.
Do you have many songs that are sort of locked away because it's songs that you wouldn't write but that you ended up writing and it's like you don't know where to put them because they don't
I never lock them away. I would always, I've written so many hundreds and hundreds of songs, but if it's the only thing that, you know, even if I don't like the song, I'll bring it to the band. And like Sick of the Blues, I didn't like that, but you know, Lilac, I didn't like that. But there were so many songs that I didn't like that I brought to the band anyway that I didn't know how I wrote. But I would always bring anything that I'd worked on to the others because often through collaboration they would evolve into things that I really did love. But actually it's like not knowing how I wrote something doesn't stop me from enjoying the thing. It's just I look at the process and it's quite mystical and obscure.
Uh, going back to Lavender Raspberries, I believe your mum didn't like it, right? She was like, I like the album, but...
She loved it, but I think it's quite a heavy one. And right. I think, you know, it's difficult to see your child be extremely depressed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I've been reading your Substack.
Thanks.
Which is really fascinating. It's really good. I only discovered you had it the other day. And there's the most recent post is really good, talking about shapes. And I think in a sort of obscure way, maybe talking about your, well, it does talk about your experience of the band in a way, but it's a fascinating post. Do you plan to do more writing?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely going to keep blogging because I find it incredibly satisfying. What's actually really annoying about writing is that when we're on the road, I cannot write at all. Ah. I used to write all the time on the road. And, like, you know, I'll journal a little bit. But, like, as soon as we get going, I just stop being able to kind of formulate ideas in writing in the way that I've been really enjoying blogging. So when we're off the road, definitely I want to practice writing more.
Well, and there's also your painting. I'm quite a fan. Do you sell any of your paints and paintings on the merch table on the Porridge Radio Tour, or do you like to keep?
I do sometimes, but I think they're just too expensive to sell at the merch table, where people want to spend, you know, 30 quid. They don't want to spend like 200, 300, 1,000 pounds. So it's like a different world.
Well, because a lot of your artwork is on your album covers and
yeah, well, exactly. So you can buy, you know, most of like the t-shirts. Design or most of the like the records I'll design, but when it comes to painting, I tend to like to see these things in each of their different spaces. So I've, you know, the band is one kind of element of this world, and then the writing blog posts and sometimes longer form pieces, that is another thing. And then painting, you know, I like to paint in my studio. I would love to have more shows. I did a show last year that was really fun. And I would love to kind of show all the paintings that I made for the album. I made a lot of lyric paintings, which was so fun.
Yeah.
I've been posting those on Instagram a little bit, but it'd be really nice to show them properly. But I made a website for my art. So then I put all my artwork on, it's like danielmargolin.art, and then I just have that all there. And it's nice for me to have separated them out a little bit, because I think otherwise I'd be overwhelmed.
Well, as an artist, what do you think about the, you know, it's like the Andy Warholization, which is not really a thing, is it? But where there's art that is, you know, a £10,000 painting that gets exhibited in an art gallery, and then there's art that you can commodify for so that everyone can enjoy, you know, prints and stuff. Where do you stand on the fence? Do you think that it diminishes value if you sort of make postcards out of your lyrical paintings and stuff? Are you iffy about that?
Art is for everyone, and it should be accessible, and that is why when you write a song, you write it quite instantly and you can perform it everywhere very quickly. All you need is your voice and your hands on the guitar. And so, like, I think there's, maybe that's a conversation about, like, how different mediums are able to be spread differently. But then when it comes to, like, making a postcard or a print of artwork, I think it's, I have so many postcards and prints, and I don't think that that cheapens the work of art itself. I think to get a small cardboard print of something beautiful is so fun. And then to know that, okay, if you can go and see paintings and you can buy a bigger painting, and there's different mediums for different purposes and for different access, but ultimately you just want people to be able to engage with what you're doing.
I wanted to ask about poetry as well, if I may. And I can't, in between writing down this question, I've kind of forgotten if I wanted to ask it because you have written poetry or because you've been studying poetry. So apologies. Did you write poetry?
Yeah, I mean, I've always written poems. In fact, as a child, I wanted to be a poet, and I have a little folder from when I was about 10 years old of all these poems that I wrote and illustrated as a kid. Like, I'd write them instead. But I have always written poems, and that's always been kind of what has... I wrote poems and I wrote lyrics, and I put the lyrics to music, and the lyrics kind of come from poems always. And that's always been a part of my practice. But in the last few years, I've made friends who write poetry and who put on poetry nights and who actually published their work and who I can go and listen to speaking their poems, and that hugely inspired me.
I find it fascinating. It's another of my sort of slightly dodgy theories that, like, although song lyrics and poetry aren't that far apart, they're very different things, and things that work really well as lyrics normally don't work as poems, and possibly the other way around. What do you think about that?
I think it just depends on who's writing them. I think it really, I mean, because you look at someone like Leonard Cohen, who's obviously poet, songwriter, lyricist, amazing. And I find that the way that I write really fits into that way of thinking about a song as a poem. Or, you know, you look at like so many like religious like psalms, or like, you know, it's, you get there's a real sense of, in a poem you really lean into, I mean, it also depends on the poem, but it's so much about cadence and about rhythm of the way that you speak and the way that the words fit together and the way that they echo each other or foreshadow each other. And you can build such huge evocative universes with poems. And that's how I think about songs. And that's when I engage with songs as like songs, that's what I'm looking for, is actually a poem. But I think that depends on the writer and the genre and the kind of thing, because if I'm listening to Bicep, I'm not looking for a poem, but like it's a different world. But when it comes to, you know, the classic song by songwriter, that is it's another thing completely. And there I think that actually songs and poems have a lot in common.
Sorry, again, to quote back at you, but I thought it was very interesting what you said. You said once, I think an artist never fully realises their goals. Things are ongoing and changing and moving, and that's good. Why do you think that? Why do artists never fully realise their goals?
I think it's not like no artist ever fully realises their goals. I think it's that the process is such a huge part of creating something. And I think if you don't have a practice, it's sometimes harder to see that actually the releasing an album for me is not part of my practice. That is the very end thing that I do when I'm ready to give it away and go on to something else. So it's like I'm never finishing, because I'm always making and I'm always creating and I'm always changing. And so yeah, like I can finish a project, but actually the project that is thinking, that is engaging with stuff, that is never ending. And that's also why, you know, I say the band is over and everyone goes, oh my God, this is so freaking, this is the end of the world. And I go, no, this is like part of the whole process of things evolving and changing and offering new potential and new ways to create and new ways to learn about the world and to represent it and connect with people. And it's like when if you saw every artistic project as about getting to the end of it, then actually what would the point of it be, where it just like things don't need to end and be completed. You get to that end point and what do you do something else.
I wonder if that's maybe slightly frustrating for you as an artist, because you know we tend to be like, well, your fifth album did this and then your sixth album did this, you know, in fact we've just, you know, been talking that kind of way, but which is like very much putting them as like separate blocks, right? Yeah. Whereas you see it as more like a continuous thing.
Yeah, definitely. And I think actually that is part of my frustration with working in the music industry, is this sense of constant everything needing a stat and a score and a financial value. And it is often soul destroying, when actually what I'm trying to do is figure out how to describe the feeling of looking at the sky, and that is not, it's not, they're not relevant to each other. And I often find myself getting sucked into that way of thinking, and it's really blocking.
But just to be clear, do you see yourself continuing to have a future in music in some form or other?
Like I haven't yet in my life been able to not be writing. So like I don't see myself stopping creating, stopping writing, stopping just doing things, but I don't have a plan about what is coming next, because I think I need to just do it in private.
Mm-hmm. Currently, the last concert is scheduled, I believe, for August the 8th in Italy. You said there might be some more sort of farewell.
Yeah, well, we're playing festivals up until August.
Okay.
So, sorry if this, maybe this is something you haven't thought about. Maybe it's like, you know, not even relevant. Have you had a thought about what the last song is you'll play? Be like, right, we're going to play the song and then we're done.
No, there is no beginning and there is no end. I don't know what the first song I played was. And I don't know what the last one is because, you know, you say it's the last one, but I am alive. And
It's true. No, that's very, I suppose it's very much sort of the way of thinking we're talking about, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
Rather than it being a...
Well, I really don't believe in... It's like if I don't say goodbye to my friends if I can help it.
I know. I'm the same. I hate saying goodbye. I always drop the smoke bomb, as we say, and disappear.
Oh, my wife tells me off for that so much. So much.
I know. Some people think it's so rude, but it's
you just
in
left
a party.
Last night.
So there's too many people to.
Exactly.
And then, don't leave. Well, and you got to go through.
At the end of a tour, when we've spent a month together and we've been in each other's company 24/7 for a month. And we're saying goodbye and we're not going to see each other for another month because we've got a month off and I don't know when I'm next going to hang out if we've got rehearsals booked. And Sam will just go, all right, see you later. See you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And then we'll just go our separate ways. And that's, for me, is like the biggest relief ever is knowing that you don't have to say goodbye in this huge way.
Yeah.
Whether or not it's the last time, you don't need to know that that's the last time.
Yeah. I don't like saying goodbye. I find it really tragic, like in movies, when someone says, and I didn't know it then, but this would be the last time I ever visited Italy. You know, something like, wow, like
exactly.
That.
Better to look back and go, oh yeah, that was the last time I ever did that. That's not going to happen again.
Oh.
It's a moment regretting that the end is there, because actually you shouldn't be, it's like just, if you exist enough in the present moment, not regretting that something is over and longing for it and driving yourself crazy with it.
It's like French. The French have got this covered because they got a word for goodbye, which is like, until I see you again. They've got a word for goodbye, which is like, until death.
Which is?
Au revoir, adieu.
Au revoir.
You should never say adieu to someone unless, you know.
Ah, adieu is to God, like
to
death.
Yeah, yeah,
you
know? Like, so it's not see you around.
Well, it's
like, see
Spanish.
You with God, basically.
Wow.
Adieu. We bid you adieu. I'm also, look, I'm going to jump on Ben's game of quoting things back to you that you've said in interviews. But I'm fascinated with something you said for The Creative Independent. And I'm taking it out of context, but I just took this. Knowing how to fight with people is the key to any good relationship. I'm fascinated because I always avoid any kind of confrontation, or I'll always sort of lose in an argument just to not confront. Can you explain what you meant by that?
Definitely.
If I could apply it to my life.
I think often this kind of gets taken the wrong way. It's not that I love confrontation or. You know, I think that arguing and fighting is painful and sad and difficult, but it's also just really necessary. And I think it's more about knowing how to acknowledge when there's something that needs to be said and just saying it, because often the act of acknowledging something allows you to move on from it. Whereas if you just hold on to it, it will only eat you up and it will continue to eat you up until the thing is beyond repair. And so if you can know how to fight with the people you love when you need to, in ways that are loving and open and communicative, you can actually have a more peaceful existence after that. And like, fighting with people you love is the worst thing, obviously, but it's also necessary, because we're people and we're fallible, and you know, everyone is annoying. What am I gonna think about it? I'm annoying, so I have to, I'm annoying, so let me annoy someone if I need to. If something's on my mind, if something's difficult, it's not going anywhere until I deal with it. Until I look at it, it's just going to keep eating me up.
Dana, it has been an absolute pleasure to speak to you again. You're playing Barcelona on the 17th of March, Razzmatazz 2, which is a lovely place. And the 19th of March, Madrid, Copérnico, which I've never been to. Is it nice, Johan?
It's nice.
Okay, good.
Amazing.
In the center.
I love Spain.
We're going to be there. We're going to be there because it's
amazing.
Hello. Yeah. I think everyone in the office is going to be there. Everyone here at Primavera Sound, everyone's big fans of your music. I don't want you to. I don't want you.
You learned nothing, Johannes.
I know. It's not really the end. It's all going and it's
exactly.
Serving, and
exactly.
I know.
More things will come.
And you know, yes, they're there, and you're doing lots of other things. And
the beauty of playing music is that you're always coming and going.
So I know.
It's always. Hi, and I'll see you in Barcelona in a few weeks. No worries.
Exactly. And we won't. And after we won't say goodbye. We'll just. Ta-da, you know.
Yeah. Look, we spoke 2 years ago. We had an interview 2 years ago. So you know. Yeah. Again,
exactly. You know, we might end up opening a restaurant together or something.
I'm not going to open a restaurant. I think that's very stressful. It's an au revoir, not an adieu. So there we go.
You're the restaurant.
So long as I can visit, I just don't want to be, you know, involved. I'm not. No.
Let's leave that to the others. Okay. Thank you, Dana. See you soon.
See ya.